Welcome to Season 6 of the Common Ground Unity Podcast. Jesus valued unity and prayed for it. We believe unity begins with Jesus-centered relationships, gathering around a table, sharing a cup of coffee or a meal. We like to say unity begins with a cup of coffee. So grab a cup and let's get started with another episode.
I think it's easy to measure our faith by what we do, serving, performing, achieving, pleasing others, and those are all parts of that. But when we live that way, we can miss the sustaining, life-giving presence of God in our own lives. You know, for example, living from the outside of the cup, it might look like being who others expect us to be. It can look like constantly trying to prove our value or define our faith by activity rather than relationship. And I think living from the inside out means learning to respond to God from our deepest self, that place of love, of truth, and communion with Him.
Well, welcome to Common Ground Unity. I'm Kevin Witham, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Veronique Weber, who is checking in from up in Boston, where I think the fall air is probably crisp and the leaves are putting on their annual show. I think it's probably in the 50s there today, Veronique. Is that right?
That's about right. That's what I feel.
That sounds wonderful. Very refreshing. Now, you know, out here on the West Coast, we grab for a jacket anytime it gets into the 50s, but I love that kind of weather. Would love to be up that way. Everything treating you well?
It's been great. You know, this is my favorite time of the year when the leaves change. It's beautiful to see. I know what follows this time of year, though, so I'm not too excited about that part, but I'm going to be in the present. It's beautiful right now.
Understand. Well, listen, here at Common Ground Unity, we love creating space for real conversations that bring people together around faith, unity, and transformation. And as the seasons are changing, we are talking about spiritual change today. We're talking about something that reaches beneath all of that and lays a foundation, spiritual formation. We're reminded it's not just about what we do for God, but what God is doing in us, shaping the inside of the cup, not just polishing the outside. So our guest today understands that deeply. Jeannie Shaw is a longtime friend of Common Ground Unity. She's been a frequent guest, even co-hosted with us before. And we've had the joy of partnering with her and Mike Young to create a spiritual formation track at the annual Stone Campbell Journal Conference. Jeannie has served for more than four decades in ministry. She holds both a master's and doctorate in spiritual formation and now serves as a teacher, life coach, and spiritual director, walking alongside others as they discover God's presence in every season of life. Her newest book that we're going to talk about today, her 20th, which that just amazes me, is titled The Inside of the Cup, Spiritual Formation from the Inside Out. It is a powerful reflection on that process of spiritual formation. Jeannie, welcome to you. And you're up in the New England area as well, aren't you?
Thank you. Yes, it's great to be with you. And I am in the New England area in beautiful Connecticut, and it is cool and windy, and the leaves have just about finished falling, but my absolute favorite time of year.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. You both make me want to be up in that part of the country at this time of year. My wife and I are going to do that journey sometime when we retire.
Oh, great.
Jeannie, can you kick us off with just sharing with us the basic premise of the inside of the cup? Again, the inside of the cup, spiritual formation from the inside out is the book. Share your thoughts a little bit on the difference between living from the inside and the outside of the cup.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Kevin. Actually, the Inside of the Cup book, it actually grew out of a series of classes my late husband, Wyndham, and I taught about 10 years ago at the New England School of Missions. Veronique, I think you might have even been in one of those classes.
My husband was. I just caught the tail end. You guys are already done.
Okay, yes. But the title comes from Jesus' teaching in Matthew 23, 25, and 26, where he tells the Pharisees, a little strong here, they're like cups that are clean on the outside, but full of greed and self-indulgence on the inside. Now, that's a sobering image, right? And Jesus, please, he says, first clean the inside of the cup, and then the outside also will be clean. But that teaching really gets to the heart of spiritual formation, because I think when Christians, no matter how young or old, don't do well spiritually, it's often not because we lack things to know and do, things on the outside, but it's usually when the inside life doesn't match the outside. And I love Paul's description of integrity in 1 Timothy 1:5, where he says, the aim of our charge is love that springs from a pure heart, a clear conscience, and a sincere faith. And that's at the heart of spiritual formation from the inside out. But, you know, in that session, the school had many important sessions on preaching and discipleship, but we kept coming back to the same truths that if we don't live our lives with God from the inside out, we miss his intent for us. And often in the process, end up struggling, hurting ourselves and others in the process. So the book comes from exploring what's really going on inside of our fears, our desires, our motivations, our longings, and how transformation really happens there. You know, I think it's easy to measure our faith by what we do, serving, performing, achieving, pleasing others, and those are all parts of that. But when we live that way, we can miss the sustaining, life-giving presence of God in our own lives. You know, for example, living from the outside of the cup, it might look like being who others expect us to be. It can look like constantly trying to prove our value or define our faith by activity rather than relationship. And I think living from the inside out means learning to respond to God from our deepest self, that place of love, of truth, and communion with him. And, you know, over the past decade, as I've continued advanced studies in spiritual formation and trained as a Christian coach and director, I have really witnessed how deeply people are hungry and longing for this kind of authentic connection. You know, one series I've helped to facilitate, which I know Veronique was also part of one of those, Forming by David Tackle, it provides a beautiful framework for this. And yet what I noted that even seasoned Christians who go through it often left saying things like, I've been a believer for decades, but I've never understood my life with God this way before. And so my hope in writing The Inside of the Cup is that readers don't see spiritual formation as another set of practices to add, but as a way of being, of giving space for the Spirit to transform our hearts so that it naturally flows into our actions. So that's the premise for The Inside of the Cup.
Well, I just got to say, for the New England School of Missions, I was teaching the preaching class right before Jeannie's class, but then I did not know you were teaching spiritual formation right after. So when you came in and I saw you, I was like, oh, what are you doing here? And when you told me what you were doing, I unpacked my bag and sat right down. And I told my husband, I'm going to be 2 hours late because I cannot pass up the opportunity to learn spiritual formation from Jeannie Shaw. So the best part of my class was the end, because I knew you were coming and I got to sit at your feet for 2 hours and listen about spiritual formation. That was just a highlight of my last couple of years. So thank you so much for that. But yeah, in chapter 2 of your book, you refer to Julia Roberts, one of my favorite actresses, and also ex-Benedict, which is, if it's on the menu, I'm getting it. So I'm really interested to hear your answer to this question. But can you please talk about this particular illustration and then some of the ideas about identity that you write about in this chapter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Veronique, that story really struck me. And the scene comes, for those who haven't seen the movie Runaway Bride, it comes where Julia Roberts' character, who is constantly running out on her grooms in every relationship she's been in. And she's just eaten her eggs the way whoever that significant other, that groom was in her life, the way he liked them. Scrambled, poached, over easy, it didn't matter. It depended on the man she was with. But at one point, she stops and realizes after the interviewer says, "You don't even know how you like your eggs." That really hit her, as it hit me, because I thought, you know, I don't really know how I like my proverbial eggs. And by what I mean by that is I had spent really so much of my life responding to what others needed. And mind you, that's good and right. Good and right things, caring for people, leading, serving, but often without enough attention to filling my own inner life. I knew what others expected from me, but I wasn't sure I really knew me. I didn't know how I liked my eggs. And it's such a moment when he comes back in and she's sitting there with 12 different kinds of eggs on her counter and says, "Eggs Benedict. I like Eggs Benedict." And she realized that was more than just how she liked her eggs. It was learning who she really was on the inside. And I knew what others expected from me and what I expected from myself, but I wasn't really sure I knew me, my own God-given desires, emotions, and calling. And I think it's easy to think that inner awareness or even spiritual formation is selfish or navel-gazing. But I believe it's actually part of faithful discipleship. You know, Jesus says, "Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me." But how can we really even deny ourselves if we don't even know who our self is, right? And it's out of this realization from the deep inside of the cup that I can really give in a way where I have already been nurtured and filled and one that does impact others. So it comes from really a place not of obligation, but of overflow. And there's a big difference in that. And I think that question's foundational for me, you know, identity. It's not about performance or role. And that's really hard. We can think, oh, no, that's not what it's about for me. But oftentimes it can be. But really, it's about who we are at the deepest level as beloved children of God. And when that identity becomes our center, everything else, our relationships, our work, our leadership, it flows from that authentic place. I think hardship often tests our identity when there's losses, when roles fall away, life changes. We see and learn what's really inside. And those moments can also become invitations to us to discover who we truly are in God, not just who we've tried to be for others, but who we really are. You know, it's funny, the author and philosopher and priest, if I may say, Henry Nouwen. His writings have had a big influence on my life. And something that he spoke about really helped me see it clearly. It had a big impact on me. In a short sermon entitled Being the Beloved, he talks about how spiritual identity means we're not what we do, what we have, or what others think of us, but we are beloved daughters and sons of God. And that realization, I mean, really down deep, it changed things for me. You know, it's not that I didn't believe that in my head. I did. I really believed that. But those three things often felt stronger than the reality that I am God's beloved. And once I started living from that place, the inside of the cup began to feel a whole lot more whole and more peaceful. And so chapter 2 invites readers to pause and ask, how do I like my eggs? In other words, who am I when I'm not performing for approval, but resting in God's love? And there is a difference.
It's so interesting the way that hardship, although we do not want it, wouldn't necessarily ask for it, but it's very hard to gain the lessons that it brings without it. You know, I think about my second pregnancy and I had sciatica, so I was confined to a wheelchair at times using a cane, and the pain was so excruciating, but really the spiritual pain that was happening underneath it all was the worst pain, because God was showing me that my identity was in what I could do. And at that point, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even get myself to the bathroom. So I had to redefine who I am, not based off what I could do, but who I am in God's eyes. And so that transformed knowing that I'm loved first thing when I wake up in the morning versus after I get into bed at night. All the things I did, you know, now I'm loved, but instead, starting in the first part of the day, I'm loved just because of who I am. It's a huge shift, and it changes everything when you really can, you know, understand that. But, you know, this misplaced confusion of identity can be so damaging to our spiritual growth. How does understanding God's truly true feelings for us really correct that confusion and help us to mature and grow?
That's really an important question, I think. Mm-hmm. And you're so right, Veronique. It's often in those some of the most sacred places can be when we are absolutely desperate and we find out what we really believe, whose we really are. And I know it was so compelling, inspiring, heartbreaking, but I, you know, watching my husband, who'd been a strong man, unable to even talk, to move any part of his body, to do any function in his body, but to still have joy, to be happy because of how God felt about him and who he was. And that just, you know, that means everything. But, you know, I think a misplaced or confused identity is honestly one of the greatest barriers to spiritual growth. Because when we don't really know who we are in God, and maybe it depends more on who other people, how, what other people think of us, or different activities we can perform, we end up living out of fear instead of out of love. And many of us, I think, quietly wrestle with questions like, what will people think? Did I do enough to please God? And that kind of thinking keeps us performing, even managing sin or trying to measure up, rather than living in the freedom of being deeply loved. I think part of the problem, and I mentioned this in the book, is we've sometimes misinterpreted key passages of scripture. We've emphasized verses like the heart's deceitful above all things without holding them alongside the truth that really was told to us in creation, that God looked at what he'd created and said it was very good. But when we lose sight of that, we can start to see ourselves and others primarily as problems to fix rather than people to be formed more into the image of God. You know, spiritual formation isn't really about sin management. It's transformation beginning in our hearts. And when we put off the old self, as Paul says, it's not to erase who we are, it's to uncover who we were created to be from the very beginning, the image bearers of a loving God. And when we begin to understand how God truly feels about us, that we're wanted, we're chosen and delighted in, that changes everything. It opens us to grow, not out of fear or guilt, but out of love. And I think that's where maturity happens, when we live as a people who are deeply secure in God's affection.
Boy, Jeannie, those are powerful thoughts. And I think a reframing for a lot of people. I remember as a younger Christian, that shift in thinking from sin management to really a transformed heart is a big leap forward, to see that it's not about managing sin. It's about a shift in desires,
yes,
and a change of affections, and getting our hearts just in a whole renewed place, putting our hearts on things above. That is so different than so much of religion kind of rooted in law and legalism and sin management and trying to do better. Worship, just comes into this so powerfully. I think as a younger worshiper, while I've always loved to worship, I remember an author who reflected on how somebody had once asked him, why do you serve a God who needs to be told all the time how wonderful he is? And that gets at such a mistaken view of God and worship. That worship doesn't meet a need in God. There is no need that we can fill. It meets a need in us. And you bring that up in your book. You write, God doesn't need our praise to feel complete, but we need to praise to become whole. So if you could, I think that's such an important concept for us as disciples of Jesus to understand. Unpack some of your thoughts about paying attention to God and worshiping Him. And you know, gratitude, awe, and praise, and how those factor into our spiritual formation.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Kevin. That does mean so much to me and really captures so much of what I've learned over the years, that God doesn't need our praise to feel complete, but we need it to be whole. You know, I think it's so easy, and increasingly more so, to move through life in a hurry. I mean, how many of us don't get agitated a bit when that car is slow in front of us, or just, you know, to wait in line, to be put on hold? We move through life in a hurry, distracted way, checking off spiritual boxes even, without really seeing. And I think one of the great losses of our time is our inability to pay attention. You know, one of my class assignments, we began with each day in the semester, we had to practice 30 minutes of solitude. And by that, not even praying prayers of for other people, but just sitting there and listening and being still. And that is hard. It's really hard. And yet paying attention, I think, is the first movement of really love, because we can't pay attention without actually paying attention. It costs something. We have to pay it. It costs our hurry. It costs our self-absorption. But I think slowing down, noticing, lingering long enough to see God in creation or in another person, that's where gratitude, awe, and praise are born. You know, the psalmist says, "The heavens declare the glory of God." And I think the Spirit still speaks that language if we're quiet enough to listen. And again, that paying attention, it does cost, because in a lifestyle that we have with deadlines, as young parents, as sports, we have to pay attention. We have to make that space somehow. It's that important. You know, in chapter 3, I talk about how these practices, gratitude, awe, and praise, they form a kind of rhythm of attentiveness, because gratitude, I think it really opens our eyes to the gifts that God has already given us that surround us. And awe reminds us that we're small and God is vast, and that we're part of something so much bigger than our just selves and our activities, however important and urgent they seem to be. And praise lifts our focus from ourselves back to the giver of all good things. And when we live from that rhythm, our souls, the inside of the cup, starts to expand. I think we become less reactive and become more receptive. And instead of trying to hold our lives together, we start to see and understand how God is already holding them. You know, so many people think of praise as something we give to God, but in reality, praise is something God gives to us, because it reorders our souls toward joy. It's not flattery. It's alignment with what's real and right and true and good. And I think that's what spiritual formation looks like at its core, moving from distraction to attention, to making space, from anxiety to gratitude, from self-focus to worship. And honestly, the more we do that, the more whole we become. because we're living as we're created to live, fully awake to the presence of God in all things. You know, my husband liked to play baseball, and he would sometimes soak an old glove. And I don't know what kind of oil it's called, but it's some kind of oil that you put on a baseball glove to make it supple. I think gratitude and awe and praise allows us to soak in God's love, to be able to be restored to the way he created us to be. You know, I often encourage people to practice just 5 minutes of noticing every day. Look for something beautiful, something ordinary, something unexpected, and thank God for them. It's amazing how quickly awe returns when gratitude leads our way.
You know, you talk about that it costs us something. It's so interesting because it either costs us some time now or it costs us, you know, that peace and all the things that we say we want later. So if we don't make the time now, it's going to cost either on the front end or the back end in ways that we probably will regret a little bit, you know, if we don't spend that time with God first.
Hello, I'm Kevin Witham, and I've been a volunteer with Common Ground Unity since its inception. And I want to take just a brief break here to discuss putting the mission of Common Ground Unity into practice and taking a new step. Unity flows out of our relationship with God. It's from the Spirit, and yet we're called to maintain the unity of the Spirit through humble, loving, gracious connection and relationships with one another. That's why Common Ground Unity was created, and that's why we want to take it to a new level that will bless you, those that participate in this ministry. And that's why we've created the Common Grounds app. It's your digital home to find local members, grab a coffee, or start a gathering right in your neighborhood. Inside, you can join or lead subgroups for local gatherings, Bible study, prayer, parenting, singles, and much more. Plus, you'll have instant access to our resource library full of videos, podcasts, and study materials. Just click the link in the show notes to join the free app. Finally, to do all of this, we urgently need your support. Of course, through your prayers, but also through your tax-deductible donation. That would really help this ministry. You can help us to share the positive message and foster unity literally around the globe. You can give today via our website or the link in our show notes. Thank you for walking this journey with us. Now back to the episode.
So I wonder, you know, time is one of the hindrances, but what are some other common things that prevent us from receiving from God and from really experiencing him?
That's a really great question, because I think most of us want to experience God, but we find it hard to actually receive from him. You know, and I've done some exercises, and I think they're even in the workbook, of just the difference when we read for knowledge, which is important. We read for, oh, this person needs this. And when we read to really receive from God, or when we listen to receive from God. And I think some of the biggest hindrances are really the simple things: noise, hurry, distraction, and a lack of reflection. Because I think we need to ask, how much a part of our lives is that? You know, we fill every quiet space with activity or noise, scrolling, scheduling, even serving, and then wonder, why does God feel so distant? You know, but the truth is, he's not distant. We're just unavailable. And I think receiving from God requires space for presence. You know, we've got to figure out how to do that. For me, a thing I do every morning, rain, shine, snow, sleet, hail, whatever, is I'll walk and in conversation with God. Sometimes I'm just walking and looking and noticing. And sometimes I'm speaking out loud. Sometimes I picture holding hands with God. I love that. But every day I will stop and just something for me, it's different for each of us, is from Psalm 36. Your love, O Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies. Your righteousness is like the mighty mountains, your justice like the great deep. And I'm walking my dogs. And it also says you preserve both people and animals. How priceless is your unfailing love. People take refuge in the shadow of your wings and eat from the abundance of your house. You give drink from your river of delights. With you is the fountain of life. In your light, we see light. I say that and feel it each day. I try to wake up each morning with from Lamentations 3, just with a reminder from God that his mercies are new every morning and his faithfulness is great. And, you know, those daily rhythms of walking, breathing, noticing creation, letting a verse settle in my heart, keep me grounded in relationship, taking it as promises, really receiving them, not just reading them. And then in the evening, I do a short reflection. It's called spiritual examine, an ancient practice that simply asks, where did I see God's presence today? And where did I resist it? And it's not about guilt. It's about awareness, about seeing God at work in the ordinary moments. And I think these rhythms of solitude, reflection, attentiveness, they help to quiet that inner noise that is so constant, right? So we can receive what God is already offering, because the truth is God is always communicating love, because God is love, right? We just need the stillness to hear it and see it.
Well, kind of shifting from there just a bit, it's not a big shift to move away from hindrances to talk a little bit about barriers and opportunities. Mm-hmm. In part two, you talk about things that can be barriers, but then things that are opportunities as well. So topics like forgiveness and transformation, being transformed through lament and traps, vulnerability and self-awareness. So Jeannie, as best as you can in the time that we have left, could you summarize just some of what you write about in this section?
Oh, sure. Thanks, Kevin. That middle section, barriers and opportunities, it's where the inside of the cup really gets honest. It looks at the things that either block us or open us to transformation. The things you mentioned, forgiveness, lament, vulnerability, and self-awareness. And those are tender, messy areas, right? Because we often would rather focus on what to do for God and that busyness rather than the inner places where we're wounded, where we feel defensive or afraid. But those are the very spaces the Spirit wants to meet us. You know, take forgiveness, for example. We can think forgiveness is excusing or forgetting, but spiritually, it's really about releasing the hold that resentment or shame has on us so love can flow again. It isn't pretending that it didn't hurt. It's letting the Spirit do the surgery on our heart so we can be free. You know, and then there's lament. I think we don't talk about that enough, practice it enough, even communally practice it, because that was such a big part of the scriptures, communal lament. It's a deeply biblical form of transformation. Grief and loss, they have a way of exposing what's inside of us. And when we bring our sorrow and even our protests to God, because that's in the scriptures, right? We find that God meets us there, not with judgment, but with compassion. And that movement from silence to honest prayer, I believe, is how lament becomes a bridge to hope again. And I think vulnerability and self-awareness are really the soil where transformation grows. You know, because we can't heal what we hide. We just can't. The more we become aware of what's actually inside, our emotions, motives, patterns, the more room the Spirit has to shape us into people of love. So in this section, I wanted to help readers see that the barriers that we most often fear become the very opportunities for transformation, because God meets us not at the surface of our strength, but in the depth of our needs.
Jeannie, thank you. This is one I'm going to probably be playing over and over again. In chapter 9, you write about one of the hardest parts of discernment is learning to listen beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. Am I responding to God's voice or to compulsion? Can you speak to discerning God's will, like specifically about our calling, our pilgrimage, and specifically the pilgrimage of transformation?
Sure. That quote you mentioned, it comes from a deep place of learning for me. Discernment at its core, I think, is learning to listen beneath the surface, to pay attention to whether I'm responding to God's voice or my own compulsion, fear, or agenda, or other voices in my ear. You know, I think we can often think of God's will as something hidden we have to figure out. But discernment is less about solving a puzzle and more about nurturing a relationship. You know, we can be confident God doesn't contradict his word, but he also isn't confined to it. The same Spirit who inspired Scripture is still alive and active, leading us into understanding, communicating comfort, conviction, and wisdom in real time. I think the question is, do we actually believe the Spirit is still alive and still speaks? You know, one of the practices I include in the workbook is called communal discernment, and it's where a group pauses together before discussion and decisions, not just to have a quick lesson from the Scripture and prayer, which those are great, and then move on to the agenda of business, but to linger in silence to ask the Spirit, what are you already doing here? What are you inviting us into? To really see the image of God in every person in the room and in those who don't have a seat at the table. And it's astonishing to see what happens when we truly give the Spirit room to lead. You know, there's also a practice called conversational prayer, which is just what it sounds like, an actual back and forth with God. You speak, you listen, you wait. I think that's a lot of what it means to pray continually. Over time, you begin to recognize his tone, his peace, his nudges. And so much of discernment, I think, is slowing down enough to ask not only what should I do, but who am I becoming as I walk with God? Discernment isn't about mastering a technique. It's about cultivating awareness. And when we truly listen beneath the surface, we discover that God's will, it really isn't a destination. It's a pilgrimage of ongoing transformation with him as done through the Spirit of God. Spiritual transformation isn't just a subtitle of the book. It's like transformed by the real active living Spirit of God, not something we do.
Yeah, I know that spiritual transformation is such a personal journey, like it's our personal pilgrimage with the Holy Spirit. But in your book, you mentioned the need for a community to really be drawn into this journey as well. So how would you like the readers to really approach your book, individual, community, or both?
Yes, both.
All.
I think we have to really give space to let the Spirit work in our own lives. But from the very beginning, God has formed us in community, and we're meant to be in community. And that's why I have two corresponding workbooks that go with the book. And one is for individuals and small groups. And it's some reflection questions, some practices that help both. There's a section for individuals and then for small groups. I already know many people who are doing that in small groups who are saying it's really, really been so helpful for them as well. And so that's something I would recommend, just if you want to go deeper and want to do that in community, just a group, maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 people, you know, whatever seems to work well. And I give even some direction on how to best approach that in ways that have seemed to work well. And then I have another workbook for families, because as families, it's a community. And really for kids, especially, preschool, school age, up through teens. There are some practices and reflections as families to take our formation deeper and to grow closer to God together and with each other. And I think that's really important process. That's why I wanted to do one specifically for families. I'll probably have one upcoming for marriages too, but that one's not yet.
That's great, Jeannie. Thank you.
Jeannie, you recently, as we're recording this podcast, we talked about being fall. I think it'll probably be a little colder when this particular podcast drops. But in October, you were in Spain and were able to walk the Camino de Santiago. Tell us a little bit about that experience and how that was transformative for you and kind of fits into this whole theme.
It sure does. Thanks for asking that. Yes, I just got back home Monday, so I'm glad this is Friday because I was honestly still a little bit in a fog for several days of both jet lag and just pure exhaustion that I think the adrenaline wore off and I thought, whew, wow, this was intense. But, you know, I had the opportunity to walk over 717 kilometers of the Camino de Santiago in Spain, and it's an ancient pilgrimage. It's a journey of body, mind, and spirit. It reminded me so much, honestly, of what the inside of the cup is really about. You know, surprise to me, and probably it's good I didn't know it, a lot of it is uphill. You know those old jokes that grandparents used to say, I used to have to walk to school in the snow uphill both ways. Well, they must have done it in Spain because I thought, I think everything is uphill, but there are blisters, fatigue moments where I wondered why it even started. Could I really do this? But along the way, you meet fellow travelers, you hear stories, and you begin to notice God in the small, ordinary moments. Sunlight in the trees, the mist on your face, the very welcomed cafes and hot coffee. Kindness from a stranger. And isn't that the journey of spiritual formation? It's not about arriving quickly or having everything figured out. You know, and honestly, there were some days that at the beginning I thought, oh, well, I don't want to be the last one in. And, you know, I started to have that little bit of competition, and I thought, no, this is wrong, you know, but we can do that in our spiritual lives. And the truth is, it's about walking slowly and honestly with God, step by step. And sometimes faster than others, and sometimes downhill, surprisingly, is even harder than uphill. But allowing Him to shape us from the inside out. And also realizing that we all travel at different speeds. We were on this Camino together, but everybody in that Camino was walking their own journey as well. It was individual and it was communal. And some of us might be limping or pausing for rest and healing, and others might arrive quickly. Some, even in our group, even had injured themselves and almost staggered in after dark. But it's not a competition. You know, our spiritual journey is a walk wrapped in the loving kindness of God and surrounded by others on the journey. And it's hard to describe the feeling when I reached my destination. You walk into the cathedral at Santiago de Compostela. As you do, it's a Gaelic community actually in Spain. And so the bagpipes, somebody's playing the bagpipes as you enter. And I just cried. And I thought of people who'd gone before me. And on that last day I was walking, I thought a lot about last days. And I remembered the last day for my husband. And the immense sadness, but the celebration that he'd done it. I remembered my dad, a faithful Christian. I was there when he died. And I remember my sisters and I, we just kind of exclaimed when he breathed his last, "You did it, Dad, you did it." Huh. And that's a lot of what I felt when I reached that destination. My eyes filled with tears. I thought of the pilgrims who'd gone before me. And I imagined what it'd be like to hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And honestly, that's what this book invites readers into. Oh, wow. That journey was an emotional one for me. It's not another set of lessons to complete. It's a companion for the road. You know, offering practical ways, especially in the workbooks, to go deeper through reflection, simple spiritual practices, and conversations about faith in everyday life. And my hope and prayer is that these resources will help people to create space to pause, to listen, to experience God in ways that will lead to wholeness. Whether or not you're walking through grief, through transition, or simply longing for a deeper connection to God, with God, you don't have to do it alone. You know, we're all pilgrims, really. Each of us walking the road of transformation. And the good news is, God walks it with us. And as pilgrims express to each other along the way, buen camino. Good journey. I'm going to close my thoughts here with a blessing. May Christ go before you to show the way. Christ beside you to walk as a friend. Christ behind you to guard and guide. Christ beneath you to uphold and steady. Christ above you to bless and watch over. And Christ within you, forming you, filling you, and making you whole. Buen camino.
What a wonderful benediction to this whole conversation. And what a beautiful and profound experience. Thank you for sharing that. I'm so grateful you had it.
Me too.
And then could share it. It's just a beautiful metaphor of our own spiritual journey, mm-hmm. and God's forming our life and preparing us for another age to come, and making us fit to serve in the present kingdom as his vessels and people. That's beautiful, Jeannie. Thank you.
And
we're grateful for your work. We're grateful for your friendship and the fellowship that we share together in Common Ground Unity, and appreciate all that you've done. For our listeners, again, the name of the book is The Inside of the Cup, Spiritual Formation from the Inside Out. You can purchase it wherever you buy your books. Amazon, I suspect, is a good place. I found it there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you can too. So, again, thank you so much, Jeannie. Veronique, so good to be with you. Once again, always just a delight. Here on Common Ground Unity, we have a vision to create and support gatherings of unity-minded Christians around the globe. If you could just imagine the good news of those gatherings all over the world, modeling the prayer of Jesus in our divided world. There are costs to bringing this ministry, to bringing this podcast and maintaining our website and having different people work with us and for us to put it all together, our YouTube channel. If you're being blessed by this ministry, I'd really encourage you to make a monthly donation. That's how this particular ministry continues. We encourage that. We often have a shortfall. This will help to support the work. So if you're blessed, we encourage you to give, and you can do that at www.commongroundunity.org/donate. It might be a small monthly gift or something larger one time, whatever you're able to do. So we hope you're blessed. We hope you'll return in a couple of weeks when another conversation is had with Common Ground Unity. We've been blessed to be with you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Common Ground Unity podcast. Please check out commongroundunity.org to learn about who we are and find gatherings in your area. Please don't forget to download the CGU app. You can also subscribe to our monthly digital newsletter, join the Facebook group, or find our YouTube channel. Until next time, God bless, and remember, unity starts with a cup of coffee.